Now, all this, what we've heard about right livelihood, perfect livelihood, in the sense of abstaining from wrong livelihood, so far, is quite clear. The principle which emerges is quite clear. But modern life, we may say, is much more complex than life in the days of the Buddha. So I personally feel that this whole question, this whole subject of right livelihood or perfect livelihood, needs reconsideration, if not restatement, in a more modern context. We can consider this perfect livelihood under various headings. First of all, of course, is the question of one's actual occupation. And I think we can divide occupations into various categories. First of all, those which are positively wrong. Livelihoods which can't possibly be right. Like, for instance, that extreme case I gave, that of the man working in the slaughterhouse. This couldn't be right under any circumstances. And secondly, second category, those which are not usually considered wrong, or which are not wrong in any sort of blatant or flagrant way, but which certainly increase people's greed. Like, for instance, the advertising industry, or the production of luxury goods, which people don't really want, but which they have to be tempted into thinking that they not only want, but which they absolutely need. And then thirdly, one can say there's a group of occupations which can constitute perfect livelihood if one makes an effort. Suppose you're working as a clerk in an office in some firm which is manufacturing quite good and necessary article, or say bread. Well, obviously, if you do your work honestly, you're conscientious, you arrive on time and you don't go earlier than you should, and you don't take too many hours off for lunch, and if you don't do things to the accounts, well, you can make that occupation a right livelihood, if not a perfect right livelihood, well, at least it's a right one. So this is the third group, or the third category. But there's another category I'd like to suggest or to introduce, and that is those occupations which don't involve undue mental strain. Now, I think this is quite important, especially nowadays, and especially for those Buddhists who want to meditate. Your means of livelihood may not be positively ethically wrong, it may not be breaking the precepts, but if it involves so much mental strain that you become tense, you can't meditate, then as a Buddhist you have to consider your position and try to find some work which is more relaxing or less demanding in this way. Then we can also think of right livelihood or perfect livelihood in the sense of vocation. This sort of livelihood is the best of all, but it's very rare. And we may define a vocation as a livelihood which is directly related to what one considers to be of ultimate importance in one's life. This, of course, will be different for different people. One can think of the profession, say, of medicine or teaching. Someone might feel, well, they want to be a nurse because they want to relieve human suffering. And this directly links up, of course, obviously, with Buddhism. And then, again, there are the arts, the various creative activities. These also, if one follows them in a creative spirit, if one doesn't commercialize them, for instance, these can be real vocations and perfect livelihood in the very best sense. And of course, in this question of perfect livelihood in the sense of vocation, here there's no distinction, no difference between one's work and one's play. And one so much enjoys one's work, one is so immersed in it, it's something one really wants to do, that you don't mind even if you spend the whole of your waking life doing it. This is, of course, a very ideal state, and one which, unfortunately, very few people, due to no fault of their own usually, are able to achieve. Now, I want to say a few words also about the question of time. I mentioned a little while ago that most people have to spend most of their waking lives working, earning a living. So I want to raise this question then: how much time should one really devote to one's livelihood? Now, the answer I'm going to give to this question may surprise some people, even shock others. How much time should one devote to one's livelihood? And I would say, in reply, as little as possible. When I said this some time ago, a couple of years ago, in another meeting somewhere in London, one old gentleman whom I knew was very, very shocked, and he reproached me afterwards. He took me to task afterwards, and he said, "Fancy saying a thing like that in a lecture publicly with all those young people there. You'll be encouraging them to just behave as well." He said a few rude words at that stage, which I won't repeat. But when I say this, I am, of course, speaking especially to Buddhists, and quite unashamedly and unrepentantly, especially speaking to the young ones, as the old have got very little choice. They're in it. In many cases, up to their necks. It's too late now. They won't get out. It's very difficult to get out the other side of 40. But I would suggest to the younger people and those whose careers, whose lives are still in the formative stage, that in this connection they should make just enough money to live on. And when I say live on, I mean live very simply. You know, just one or two cars. And devote the rest of their time to Buddhism. To the study of the scriptures, to meditation, helping to run, to conduct the Buddhist movement, and so on. And they can do this in two ways, or one of two ways. Either have a regular part-time job, which brings in enough money to live, and spend the rest of their time for Buddhism, or, if they can, and this isn't really easy, I know, but some people do it, I know this too, work, say, for 6 months, and then be off for 6 months, maintaining and supporting oneself, of course, out of what one has earned during the 6 months, and spend the greater part of one's time meditating, studying, and so forth. It does, of course, mean cutting down one's needs, or rather, cutting down one's wants. But it's surprising how much one can cut down if one really makes up one's mind to do so. And this is good not only for oneself, but it's also good for Buddhism, because the movement is expanding, as we all know, and we certainly need more people. And we need what we might describe, and I hope that here we don't go too much astray from tradition. We need, really, people who will be sort of part-time monks, as it were. And we do hope in our own Western Buddhist order, which is now in process of formation, we do hope to have a category of this sort, intermediate, as it were, between the ordinary lay person fully immersed in the mire of the samsara, just doing his best to bloom as a lotus in the midst of it all, and on the other hand, one who is committed permanently, full-time, as, for instance, the monk is. In between these two extreme categories, as it were, we do want people who've got one foot in one world, as it were, and one foot in the other, and act as a sort of bridge between the two. A category of this sort in the modern world very definitely, I feel, has its place. So this is just a suggestion thrown out for the benefit especially of the younger people among you, one or two of whom I notice are pricking up their ears in a very marked manner.